This is the Cloud Ace Podcast, bringing you the latest in cloud security through captivating chats with fascinating cybersecurity experts who are leaving their mark on the industry. Cloud Ace is brought to you by the SANS Institute and hosted by SANS fellow Frank Kim. And now, prepare for departure. You're cleared for takeoff. Here's your captain, Frank Kim.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the SANS Cloud Ace Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to have with us Deneen DiFiore. She's the CISO over at United Airlines. Deneen, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to have a conversation.
Yeah, all right. Excellent. You know, hey, we first met earlier this year, and, you know, I heard all of the stuff that you were talking about and the amazing stories that you had. And I just thought to myself, oh, we've got to have Deneen on as a guest to share this with her experience and wisdom with a broader audience. So again, yeah, really appreciate it. I think people are going to love it.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, so let's go ahead and just dive right in. You know, I usually like to start these with a little bit of personal history. So can you share a little bit about your personal and family history? And well, hey, what, if any, influence that had maybe on your choice of career?
Sure. So I grew up in a big family. I'm the oldest of five kids. So always had my siblings around and lots of family and friends. So definitely had an impact on me and my approach to people and interaction. So I like to make sure that I know people, understand people, and I kind of thrive off of that as well too. So definitely influenced me in the way I kind of approach things. I wouldn't say that it influenced my career choices so much, but definitely had an impact on the approach that I take in kind of not just my day-to-day personal life, but how I approach leadership and building relationships and gaining trust with folks. It definitely shaped me in that way.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Now, did you always know that you wanted to get into technology?
No. I kind of got into technology by accident. Got into cyber kind of by accident as well, too. So I didn't take a traditional path. My education is actually in healthcare and health sciences, biology. So I have a degree in biology and did some graduate work in healthcare operations. And as luck would have it, we were, during one of my internships or externships, we were looking at changing over to a technology system from a lot of paper-based processes. And I really liked the technology aspect, implementing the technology and understanding how the technology could enable the business processes a lot more than running kind of the operational stuff. So I kind of transitioned that way. And then out of that, I transitioned into a technology role, and I did various technology roles in a couple of different places, and ended up in a CIO role that there was a cyber event. And from that, you know, kind of happened to be at the right place at the right time, I guess, if you want to frame it that way, and ended up working through that cyber event and ended up in cybersecurity and kind of never looked back.
Wow. Okay. So you kind of preempted, you know, one of my next questions. But before we get there, you know, I actually spent a lot of time in healthcare myself, but always on the IT side, always on the technology side. And, you know, knowing healthcare, there are plenty of opportunities for technology to make a difference. So in a sense, maybe that makes sense why you wound up moving in that direction. And, you know, in terms of kind of that CIO role that you had, you know, you just described, well, maybe why that led you to getting into security specifically. But I guess, you know, before that event, you know, how long were you in that CIO role or kind of in technology more broadly?
Sure. Yeah. So I started, started early career in a technology role, doing everything from infrastructure, like hardcore infrastructure, like Linux and Solaris type of system admin roles to middleware, to application, but just kind of across the gamut. I tried to understand a little bit and get a gain experience across the board of different types of technologies. So I was in that kind of track for a while. I ended up getting a pretty, great opportunity at GE to lead a team of IT professionals that was transitioning, setting up the IT strategy for a new kind of business unit. If you're familiar at all with GE, you know, there's now that they're separate three business units, but and they're splitting off now nowadays. But back in the day, there was 9, 10, 12 business units, all these, you know, big conglomerate. And we were always kind of reorganizing and moving around businesses and merging acquisitions and things like that. So I got a chance to lead a technology team and set the IT strategy for one of those reorganizations. And then through that program, I ended up getting a CIO role after kind of, you know, creating the strategy around technology approach as well as organizational strategy to support the new business unit.
Very cool. So you're doing that for a while. You're enjoying yourself. Sounds like, you know, a lot of fun building out that area. Then the event happens, the incident happens, and you know, you're not in security proper at that time. So what did it look like? How did that transpire? How did you get pulled in? And you know, kind of, did you wind up doing more of the security stuff than you expected? And then that's what led into it?
Well, I think, you know, and this was a while ago. So, you know, back in what, 2008, 2009 timeframe. So at that time, you have to remember that, you know, cybersecurity as it kind of exists as a business risk management function really didn't exist in that context, right? It was more of, I'll say the infrastructure teams or the technology teams, you're putting protections around the perimeter, network security, you know, things like that, right? So that's kind of the context that we were operating with. When we did get notification of the event, I had to work and partner with those technology teams, but it was really around what I kind of thought was really interesting and kind of it kind of hooked me, right, was the risks associated with, you know, the data exfil that happened, the impact on the operations, and trying to understand that, okay, in terms of technology and what we'd have to do to change things, like, okay, do we have to shut, you know, that network segment off, and how did that impact what the business could do, and what does that the impact on revenue or the operational components of the business, and then bridging that gap to translate the risk of what was happening on, because it's nebulous, it's behind the scenes, right? Nobody really knows. They can't see the threat actor or attacker. They're just trusting you to say, this is what's happening. Translating that and really telling the story and articulating that in a manner that the business could understand it and then make the appropriate decisions so they could be resilient and get back to normal operations. So that's kind of what hooked me. And it was really, really kind of eye-opening to go through you know, the incident response, the business risk management, and even some of the, I'll say, regulatory and law enforcement, you know, kind of discussions that were happening at that time. So it was really interesting, a lot different, I'll say, approach from a technology leadership standpoint and a different lens to look at what you're doing. So I really enjoyed that and kind of said, this is something probably that's going to be more, you know, a skill set and a capability that we're going to have to lean into. And lo and behold, look where we are today.
Yeah, amazing. So, you know, that happens, that event occurs, and then you're basically thrown into the fire, you know, get exposure to all of the fun, interesting back-end items of security, as you just mentioned. So then how long does it take? You know, of course, it took a while, a little bit, to deal with that, the fallout of that incident, I'm sure. And then, you know, then fast forward, you know, you wind up becoming the CISO at one of the areas at GE, right? And
right.
How did that transition take place?
Yeah. So again, you know, we had our event in the business unit that I was, you know, in the IT role at that time. But then there was also, you know, a lot of things that were evolving. You know, there were some big cyber events that were happening at that time. I think JP Morgan Chase, WikiLeaks, there was just a bunch of stuff happening, right? And, you know, kudos to the leadership at that time at GE. They were like, okay, well, what's our cyber posture? What's our cyber position? And, you know, again, we had the technology piece of it back in the technology organization, but it needed to be kind of brought up to the front and really build that capability across our company. So, you know, of course, you know, being in the spotlight a little bit there around going through those events, I was kind of tapped on the shoulder to help build that capability out at GE.
Yeah, well, hey, that's great. So, you know, you had buy-in from the very beginning in terms of leadership's understanding of the need for it. Now, I believe, hey, so you were the CISO, CTO, and I believe Chief Product Security Officer at GE Aviation. Now, this is all at a time when the landscape, as you said, is changing, but the business is changing, but the technology is also changing with cloud adoption. So of all these confluence of different factors. So what was that journey look like? What was that journey like, and how did that look?
Yeah, so that was a really interesting time. We were one of the first companies to really go cloud, like cloud first, right on
Never heard of that.
an industrial scale. So I learned a lot, and it was around two things, right? I'll say two dimensions. Not only from the internal kind of enterprise, the way we would have to approach IT differently and IT security differently and cybersecurity differently within the cloud landscape, because you do have to think about the instrumentation, telemetry, the way you apply controls and the way you validate controls very differently than what we had done before, right? We had much more control when it was data center, on-prem. You could secure the perimeter and do like that, a pretty solid, pretty, I'll say, clear defense in depth strategy. When you move to cloud first, you're giving a lot of the responsibility and accountability to instantiate those security controls, at the app dev team, in the app dev teams, and even in the, I'll say, consumerization of that technology. So changing the way that we had to think about technology, even partner at that time with some of the web services companies that were kind of developing their technologies, from colos to what we have today. It was like that evolution, So that was very interesting to be on the forefront of that. And then on the other aspect, we also were, we were selling industrial digital solutions to other companies. So we were like a B2B company. We were developing products, digital products that we had never developed before. So getting that, I'll say, security CTO product dev mindset was different, because you had to really understand kind of the market and all the different ways that people did cybersecurity and wanted to use the solutions versus, the world that I lived in and I could control and I could influence, the IT leaders to do things one way and set standards and use this tech stack. We didn't have control. I didn't have control over that from a, customer base. So how do you change your mindset to develop, secure by design, for many organizations to consume? So really, really interesting time. I learned a lot.
And you mentioned that a key word there is, I think is mindset. And, hey, keep me honest here. Am I remembering it correctly that was it the GE CEO at one point that said, "Hey, look, everybody at some in some form or fashion is going to become an engineer." Now, I don't think he really meant that, hey, everybody's going to be writing code per se, but it'd be that mindset, right? That you're really talking about the shift to cloud.
I think he also said, like, every company will be a software company in some sense. Like, you wake up, you go to bed an industrial company, you wake up a software company, a digital company. And to some sense, that is true. The, technology and digital is in any aspect of any operation today, and really gives you the capability to scale and do things that you haven't been able to do before. So making sure that's a secure, trusted experience across your digital properties is really, really key, I think, to enabling any business. So it's exciting to be in a CISO role, and continuing to make those things happen.
One of the biggest challenges, I think, as a former CISO myself, and talking with other friends and colleagues that take on new opportunities and new businesses that they haven't been in, one of the hardest things I think is for CISOs to truly understand the business. How does it work, and what are the key strategic objectives? And you mentioned this earlier, is GE itself is a combination of many different businesses, and there might be some common themes, but with aviation and industrial and energy and so on. At your time there, how did you see what were some of the key differences across those business units? And were they informed by different threats, or were there different business drivers? Oh, I need to tweak my program this way.
And again, when we worked as a CISO council a lot of the times from the different business units, because we all had to, we wanted to leverage synergies and capabilities and be effective and efficient and get the best outcomes at an accelerated pace, right? But we all had a little bit different priorities and threats that we had to consider. So myself being in aviation, I was a large defense contractor, aerospace and defense contractor, the largest in the GE portfolio. And then you maybe had a business like GE Lighting, which didn't need to worry about that, right? So how do you, you know, and I have requirements from, you know, large defense, from the defense, you know, from the DOD and MODs across the world saying I have to do things a certain way. So, you know, making sure that I could meet the obligations that we had as a business to our customers, to in national security as well, too, but also work in a model that was quick and nimble and fast and, you know, could support, you know, the good of the whole conglomerate. So it was a little bit challenging because there were different competing requirements. And I always felt like we were here, right, up top. And there were maybe some, the denominator was a little bit too low for, you know what I mean, for us at this that time. So it was always interesting to try to balance that out and get consensus and make people understand that, you know, we had to do things this way because of, you know, our obligations and how did that work in that larger framework.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. You know, going back to cloud security a little bit, you know, now cloud is, of course, much more well understood. And we mentioned mindset already as a key component in this. But in the early days, you know, how did you build cloud security expertise for the team overall, especially when everybody's trying to figure this out, whether it be public cloud or, you know, I know GE did a lot of stuff internally as well.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it was, a focus on continuous education and learning, right? We definitely invested in our people and gaining new skill sets and made sure that, everybody, you know, had the technical baseline that we needed it to operate in that new kind of paradigm, right? So a lot of investment in technology and training, as well as making sure that people understood the context of what we were trying, what the outcomes the business was trying to get, and the way that we needed to work would be a little bit different, you know. So moving from, you know, moving really towards, you know, kind of, you know, iterative cycles and, you know, like lean and MVPs and things like that, like changing the way we work to get the outcomes was really important for us at that time.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Now, let's switch gears a little bit. You know, after a long, successful run at GE, you know, you've now been at United Airlines for, I think it's been about 4 years, which means you joined.
Up on that.
Yeah, right at the start of COVID, right? Perfect timing.
Right. Perfect timing.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, what did the program look like when you started and kind of what's different today? And can you share a little bit about kind of what happened when you joined?
Yeah, well, the world changed significantly, right? When I joined, and then 6 weeks, we had a global pandemic where, you know, the world changed and the threat landscape evolved very quickly for everyone and continues to evolve on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour basis, right? So I think the foundation at United was based in, you know, data protection, you know, data loss, really around what you think of as core cybersecurity premises, compliance as well, too, which are all good to have in table stakes. COVID changed things a lot because we had to, you know, the business changed the way we worked. We worked from in the office to a virtual for a section of our population. Most employees are in the airports and on the planes and things like that. So that didn't change. But for our, portion of the population, we had to look at remote work and we had to re-instrument our environment again. You know, it was, when you're trying to have everything go through the data center, you have a certain way of securing and certain tools and technologies and a security architecture that works. When you're looking at cloud adoption, SaaS, remote working solutions, it's a different architecture and paradigm. So we had to quickly shift that over. The other thing that changed a lot was the way we interacted with our customers. So, you know, we were leaning into digital capabilities, self-serve capabilities. So we had to think about what our digital solutions looked like and the security requirements that were needed to support those outcomes. We were even trying to do things that we hadn't done before as an airline, right? We were handling information like COVID, COVID test results and immunizations uploaded in our app that was healthcare information that any airline had to deal with, right? So how do you create a security framework that protects the information in the manner that's trusted for that type of data, right? It's not just your name and passport information and address or credit card. It's now people's health, health information, which gives it a different spin. So we had to create a security framework that would enable us to do that and, you know, and create the Travel Ready Center that let our customers get that information and, you know, be on their way in a manner that was really convenient for them and differentiated us for that safe travel experience. So we had to continuously evolve, right? And then the threat actors are continuously evolving. You went from, I'll say the main, of course, there were nation states and hacktivists and initial access brokers and all that kind of stuff, right, that there. But, cybercrime, fraud, all that stuff was there. But then you really saw a surge, right, in disruptive attacks. So we had to add not just the cybersecurity and data protection kind of controls and approaches and processes, but really lean into cyber resiliency, right? Like how do we make sure that the airline can run and bounce back to stable operations in the event of a cyber attack, whether it be like a disruptive DDoS attack or ransomware or whatever it is, right? That would potentially harm our operation. And just an example for that, like our segmentation strategy, again, was based on our network segmentation strategy was based on, I'll say, types of data, right? Like PCI data, PII data, and we would zone things and, put things and protect things from that perspective. When you added the layer of resiliency in, the workload segmentation strategy had to change because we had to protect the capabilities and the systems that would run the airline in a way to get a plane from point A to point B safely. So, we didn't stop doing the data protection and data zoning and things like that, but we had to add a component of segmentation based on resiliency and other things like that. So that's just an example of how things changed very, very quickly.
Hey, so, you were just talking about the need to go from kind of data segmentation to resiliency a little bit. And, certainly the cloud enables a lot of that. How much is in the cloud? Was it the cloud that really set that up? Or is it a broader kind of re-architecture, a combination of kind of in the cloud and on-prem? Kind of what does that practically, tactically look like?
Yeah, so I think it's a hybrid strategy. I mean, just the way the airline works, right? There's a lot of there's strategy to, I'll say, go cloud first where we can, but there's a lot of systems that have been in place for a long time that it's going to take a little bit of time and effort to get where we wanted to be. But the goal is to get to all of our systems and workloads in the cloud. So cloud definitely enables a different, approach and dynamic approach to cybersecurity. So being able to keep up with changes and, apply controls based on those changes helps a lot. So, as the technology teams transform and migrate workloads to the cloud, we're definitely taking advantage of, a security architecture and posture that is applied based on, certain attributes, as well as can flex and change dynamically. So we're kind of we're trying to keep ahead of that enforcement versus doing a detection and seeing something's out of spec or hasn't had, isn't performing to what we think it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Makes a lot of sense. Hey, let's switch gears a little bit away from the technology and, talk a little bit about kind of what works from an overall leadership perspective. And can you give some examples of what's worked best in communicating to leadership and the board about kind of the value that the security program is adding?
Sure, absolutely. And I think it's really important that, all kind of technology leaders, particularly cybersecurity leaders, can have that value story and communicate it in a way that resonates with their stakeholders and their leadership. So I think it's really important to understand, why you're doing what you're doing, right? What are the outcomes that the business is trying to achieve? And then how do you help that and aid that and really, really enable the business to do things they couldn't do before because you as a cybersecurity professional are removing risks or mitigating risks or making that tolerance acceptable. So I think about, examples like customer identity. Customer identity I think initially people think of it as, customer access to whatever your app, your resources, and you want to make sure they're secure and there's no fraud and the accounts aren't taken over and things like that. So you think about it in a you know, strictly cybersecurity and fraud protection sense. But when you look at customer identity, that really sets the foundation for your strategy on how you interact and enable the customer, know the customer, provide more value-added services, more personalized services, and things like that. So being able to articulate the value that, yes, we're going to set this foundation of customer identity and security up, but it enables greater outcomes and business value add is an example of a story and a connection you could make. Another thing too is, you know, as you look at the state of the world and how cyber can aid in risk decisions around, you know, where you're operating and what you're doing in some high risk countries is another kind of value add. So there's a lot of things that you can, as a cybersecurity professional, if you think about what outcomes the business is trying to achieve, you have a role to play in that and really articulating what that is and making the connections for your business and operational leadership.
Yeah, great. Now, being at United for about 4 years now, you know, can you kind of, what would you say are the broad brushstrokes of, you know, what the program was like then and, and what the program looks like now, especially with these COVID changes?
Yeah, so, I think as I mentioned, we keep on layering dimensions of our program. So, we built on the foundation of, I'll say, cybersecurity and data protection to make sure that we were, doing what I'll say are table stakes, being brilliant at the basics. So making sure we have, the data protection and controls in place, making sure that we have great vulnerability management and response procedures, right? So we are identifying vulnerabilities quickly and making sure we're remediating them in a swift manner. Making sure we have great incident response, detection and response processes as well, so we can identify threats quickly and remediate them. So building really enhancing those, I'll say, basic cybersecurity foundational aspects of the program. Then we later on, as I mentioned, the cyber resiliency pieces. So advancing our capabilities in terms of how the threat is evolving and how the technology is evolving. So when you think about cloud adoption, as well as the threat evolution, putting that cyber resiliency dimension to the program. So things like, like I said, the overhaul of the segmentation strategy, more capability around immutable backups and recovery, and then also integrating into our business continuity planning and response. So it's not just a cyber response, it's an actual business response to a cyber threat. So you're building those advanced capabilities and continuing to do that. And then the third kind of tenet of the program now is really around cyber safety. So if you think of us as an airline, safety is front and center in everything we do. So how do we make sure that we have a program and we are building out a program as our fleet changes for all the e-enabled and connected aircraft and ground information systems, that they're secure and safe, in terms of flight safety and continued airworthiness, as well as the component of cyber safety that extends to all employees, particularly our frontline employees. How do they interact with technology just like they interact with other tools and processes and services from a safety perspective? How do they interact with technology in a cyber safe manner? So it's really kind of evolved from cybersecurity to adding cyber resiliency to adding cyber safety. So it's an evolutionary strategy, but we're still working on it, and we continue to add capabilities and, enhance our baseline information, kind of raise the bar, add capabilities, and make sure that the business is safe and secure as they enable new outcomes.
Yeah, great. And tying that back to kind of the board and senior level communications, it seems like, hey, if you're, talking about resiliency and safety and things that matter to the business and, keeping passengers safe, that's kind of the story kind of tells itself in a sense, right? You don't need to talk about all the technical details.
Right, right. Yeah. And I think as you're having those conversations with your leadership and the board, I mean, they don't really want to know how many vulnerabilities and what the count is and what the critical high flaw ratio is. Like they don't really want, like, you're there and you got that. You're managing that from a day-to-day perspective. What they want to understand is, like they want to understand the impact to, you know, the overall financial stability, operational stability of the company, and then how you're kind of managing that to make sure that the impact is as minimal as it is if there was something to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Hey, well, moving on here, you know, we'll switch to talk about something else. You know, you're the chair of the Aviation ISAP. And yeah, can you tell us a little bit about what the organization, the charter is, what it's focused on, kind of your sure. your focus there, your role there?
Yeah, so I've been with the Aviation ISAC as a board member, as a founding member, since it started. So, you know, I think majority of industries have an information sharing and analysis center where member companies have a trusted community where they're able to share, you know, cyber threats and real time and have connection into kind of industry specific, agencies and oversight, and really building the community to protect as a community and do collective defense. So it's important for us as the aviation, especially in aviation, because we don't operate standalone. You know, everybody uses airport infrastructure and technology and networks. Our assets and our crews, our physical assets, our planes and our people go from place to place. They could be in New York, and 6 hours later, they're in London, right? And our planes are the same way. So we have to make sure that as we look at the overall ecosystem of aviation, we have a mechanism to share threats dynamically and quickly. And then we have a place to, you know, report vulnerabilities where we need to, and then make sure that that's all kind of done in that trusted community. So the Aviation ISAC plays a key role in that, and has for years.
And just like in other industries, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the FSISAC for financial services, yeah. You know, a lot of times what happens in the HISAC from a healthcare perspective is that, you know, one of the members of the ISAC might see an attack against them,
right.
And, you know, might see some indicators and share that and say, hey, if something's going to hit the financial services,
yes.
One company, it'll likely hit another. Is that a key element of kind of what your team is looking at as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, we make sure that we share threats appropriately and kind of in real time as fast as we can. Because, again, you know, if an airport is experiencing something, there's probably another airport that is going to experience it. Or if one airline is targeting, there's probably already happening to another airline. So we make sure that we are collaborating and sharing that information so we can all put the proactive and preventative measures, or at least beyond the, you know, kind of the shields up approach, right, where we, when we need to. So that's definitely a key tenet of how we operate with the ISAC.
All right. Now, also, you know, you're also on the board of a publicly traded company. And, you know, I know a lot of CISOs who are looking for similar opportunities, but they don't necessarily maybe fully get the amount of work, the homework, the responsibility
yeah.
that comes with it. And, you know, I guess, you know, multiple questions here, but, you know, first, you know, kind of, hey, what's the background? How did this role come about?
Yeah, I think like other opportunities, right? I think as you put your name out there and build your brand and you showcase your expertise, you know, people take notice, right? And these opportunities, you're gonna get an opportunity for a board position through probably an executive recruiter or a networking opportunity. You're not gonna apply for a board positioning, you know, on board. Whatever those applications are, you're not going to apply for one and get one. That's not really the way it works. So you do have to have a network and put your name out there and express interest. So, you know, mine came through one of those. Someone had known me and recommended me and had the conversation that way to see if it was a fit. So you know, that's how it came up. But I think people need to understand that it's not like you have to. Board positions are really around that. If you get them, they're through your network.
Yeah, that's exactly. And yeah, that's definitely the common reality. And,
yeah.
And for these anybody considering these roles, you know, kind of what advice would you have for CISOs, especially when considering such opportunities? What should they do to kind of get ready for that possibility?
Yeah, so I think a common misconception is that, you know, boards are looking for CISOs because they want a cyber expert on the board. Well, that may be true, but you have to bring way more to the table than being a subject matter expert. You know, you need to demonstrate that you understand corporate governance, operational, like if you've had operational responsibilities, if you've had product development or P&L responsibilities, right? Like regulatory, in regulatory experience in shaping policy and lobbying for policy and things like that. So you have to have a well-rounded, I'll say, business acumen in addition to being, you know, a great risk manager and an operational CISO. You're not going to get on a board because you're an operational CISO. You're going to get on a board because you have all that other stuff that is that I mentioned, right? And I think that's really important for people to understand that. And if you don't have that, look for experiences that can stretch you and give you, you know, exposure to some of those skills and capabilities I mentioned.
And exactly. I mean, we see those the headlines that say, oh, you know, boards may look for or may be required to have a security expert. But, you know, they're not looking for that technical security expert to join the board, right? It's a much bigger picture that the potential candidate needs to be aware of. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and the other thing I would say, too, is it is work, right? You have to be able to participate and add value in not just the risk committee or technology risk committee that, you know, you're going to be put on, but in the general board meetings and in the overall, you know, corporate strategy and things like that. Boards are, you know, in place to, you know, represent, make sure that the shareholder is, you know, that the company is creating shareholder value. They're also put in place to make sure that there's, you know, that they're doing the CEO succession planning and things like that. So that's kind of your, and the main purpose there is for that corporate governance. It's not to assess if the cybersecurity program is good or bad.
Yeah, exactly. Is there a kind of rule of thumb in terms of kind of how much time, work, effort, homework that it takes to get ready for this? Because, you know, like you said, it's understanding really the business. And a lot of that is financial statements and strategy and all the different areas.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely have to be engaged, and it's not a just show up four times at the board meeting, right? There's a lot of, special meetings because there's always special topics that are happening. So you have to be available and be able to manage your time. Especially if you're if you do have a full-time role and you have obligations at your company, you have to make sure that is something that you're able to handle. When you're prepping for the board meeting, there's a, you know, probably several hundred page packet that comes out that you have to run through and figure it out. And if you don't know things, you're going to have to set up time with the company CFO and say, walk me through this. I don't understand this. Why is this metric look like this? And I'm used to that. You have to ask questions and make sure you're really understanding the metrics, the numbers, the financial statements, the product strategy, if you're in a company like that, and really being able to understand the information and ask the questions that way. But it is work.
Great. Yeah. Great tips. Before we close things out, let me go ahead and, give you an opportunity to ask a reverso question, you know, anything that you might like to ask me.
Sure. So I'm going to just go off topic. I'm not going to talk about cyber or anything like that. I would ask you, if you could do anything else, what job would you have? Like, if you said, I could do anything in the world, anything I wanted in the world, what job would you have?
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it when people go off technology and off security. Now, when I was in high school, I had what I considered at my time to be a dream job of working at a comic book store. I convinced the owner of my local comic book store to give me a job. I basically went in, you know, almost every day and kind of begged him, and I finally wore him down. So, of course, you know, that's still no longer my dream. Now, fast forward to today, I think it would be something along the lines of, I love spirits and cocktails. And, it might be something like learning how to distill tequila or make amazing tequila, right? Just from not from a mass production perspective, but just from a taste and flavor perspective. Yeah. And to be able to figure out, you know, what are the different elements of the process, from kind of the harvest and the growing of the fruit and all of that, to how it's processed and how it's cooked, all the way down to fermentation and then eventually distillation and aging in the barrels. So, and how all of that, those various factors influence the flavor profile that comes out. So something along those lines, I think, would be super fun, or something in that industry.
Oh, great. That sounds fun. That's great. Well, if you ever happen to do that, I will be, I will invite me to a tasting.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Great. Now, well, hey, now you got me curious. What's your answer to that, Busted?
So I would say, like, I was always a huge fan of Anthony Bourdain, and the way he got to travel the world, and, you know, travel the world, see great places, see different cultures, meet different people, and eat amazing food. I would love to do, and write about it, right? And document it. I would love to do something like that. So that would be my dream job.
Amazing. Well, hey, it's a good combination here with food and spirits. So yeah. Hey, I think we can do something together in our next
lives. Collaboration, for sure.
Yeah. Well, hey, Denis, this was great. I want to thank you so much for joining everybody. And this was Denis DiFiore from United Airlines. And Denis, really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Frank. It was great to be there. I enjoyed the conversation.
All right. Take care. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody. Okay.